Hey, it's Matt from NoMeatAthlete.com, and I am absolutely thrilled today to be talking to ultramarathon runner Scott Jurek. You've certainly heard of Scott if you've read Born to Run, where he was pretty prominently featured. But even if not, his resume pretty much speaks for itself in the ultra running world. Scott won the Western States 100 miler 7 consecutive times, and he's twice won the Badwater Ultramarathon, and most recently he set the American 24-hour record by running 165 miles. And by the way, Scott does all this on a vegan diet, which makes him an incredible inspiration for me and I'm sure many of the readers of this site. So, Scott, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
So I guess you probably realize that you're kind of a guy that we all point to when someone says, how can you really expect to run not just marathons, but ultramarathons and things like that on a vegetarian or a vegan diet, that it's hard to do that without getting the protein that you can get from animal products and all that. So just wanted to talk a little bit about that. What kind of made you become a vegan? I mean, I know you did it after you were already an established ultra runner. So just kind of wanted to see what were the motivating factors for you and then what impact you actually think it has on your running.
My initial first reason was long-term health. I had done a bit of reading by Dr. Andrew Weil. Actually, the first book I read of his was Spontaneous Healing. And I was going through physical therapy school at the time. My mother had multiple sclerosis at that time for, I think, almost 12 years. And just seeing the chronic disease in my physical therapy work and then going through schooling in the medical profession, just that there's got to be something else to long-term health. And again, I was eating not so great of a diet and grew up hunting and fishing and eating a lot of meat and definitely was a meat and potatoes guy, but just really got inspired by the whole body's ability to heal itself and through natural healing. And everything kind of kept pointing towards the vegetarian side of things. So really it was out of long-term health, and it was after I read Howard Lyman's book, Mad Cowboy, that it truly inspired me. Okay, if this third-generation cattle rancher can go vegan, so can a backwoods Minnesota guy like myself.
Right. So then, certainly for the long-term health, I mean, I think a lot of people are really convinced that it is the way to go for long-term health. But what about running? Were you concerned then? Because you already were an ultra-runner, right?
Definitely. Yes, I had... I forget that point. I mean, in 99, I'd already run my first 100-miler just 6 months prior. I had, I think, raced close to 8 ultras that season. So I definitely had a fair number of ultramarathons under my belt and had been competing also in Nordic ski racing. So for me, I looked at this as long-term health, but as I read more and as I started getting into changing my diet, I just started noticing the recovery benefits, the ability of my body to be consistent for workouts and for races, and that's so critical. And also, as much as it's not always linked to health and the homeostasis of the body, but injuries and injury prevention. I mean, again, repetitive use of a joint or repetitive use of muscles isn't always caused by nutrition, but there is a role in terms of healing itself. So definitely when you're running ultramarathons or any, I guess, ultra endurance sport, there's a lot of repetition that occurs, and nutrition will support the healing process and the recovery process.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I've definitely noticed that in my own experience, just that when I did change my diet, that I wouldn't necessarily say that I started putting on muscle better or all of a sudden got much faster, besides the fact that I lost some weight. But the recovery aspect of it has just, to me, seemed just a much better than it was when I used to eat meat. And
definitely.
Especially just injury prevention. It just somehow seems like you can go longer without getting hurt.
Definitely. So, and like you said, for some people, it is a great diet to better the body composition, which I think is even better than just losing body fat, because so many people assume, okay, yeah, it'd be great if I could lose some weight for whatever sport or just for health, and then they find out that they end up losing muscle mass too. So on
right.
a vegan diet, I was improving not only my body composition, but I was increasing muscle mass. And a lot of people assume that one needs to eat animal products to produce a good amount of muscle mass or sufficient muscle mass for even power sports, and that's definitely been proven false time and time again.
Yeah, definitely. So then what type of foods are you actually eating when you're really training hard? I read the New York Times article with Mark Bittman where they said that you, or maybe you said that you ate 5,000 to 8,000 calories a day. So just kind of wondered, like, what types of foods are you eating there? Are you doing, like, what so many vegans and vegetarians involved in sports tend to go to, like, the low-gluten or the sprouting and soaking? I mean, a lot of people tend to go really far with it like that. And just wondering if you are eating more, like, normal foods that even non-vegetarians eat a lot of, or is it really specialized stuff like that?
I mean, I definitely, one of the reasons I did enjoy the transition to being a vegetarian and vegan was the fact that all of these new doors opened to me and all of these new great foods that I never had used or ate before in my life were now, you know, kind of center stage. So for me, it became, you know, this way of incorporating new foods into my diet. However, I still eat a lot of the traditional foods. And I think for anybody who starts out trying to be vegetarian or wanting to incorporate more plant-based foods, the important thing is to don't think that you have to eat all these specialized foods. There's definitely a lot of variety now, and the amount of, I guess, choices a vegetarian or vegan has can sometimes overwhelm people. So for me, I eat a good mix. I mean, my whole emphasis now over the years, like everybody transition, or a lot of people transition slowly, didn't do a whole lot of the meat analogs or, faux meats. But, for me, it was all about calorie intake at first. And then as time went on, I started incorporating more quality. And I think that's one of my big recommendations for so many people. So for me right now, it's all about eating as much whole foods as I can in their original state. It incorporates a fair amount of raw food, although I do incorporate legumes and grains. And obviously some of the cooked fruits and, or, sorry, vegetables that, I grew up on somewhat. Again, it was one vegetable around the meat and potato plate.
Right. So another food type thing was, I noticed that you endorse Udo's oil, right? The omega-3, omega-6 supplement?
That's true. It's one of the few.
yeah, that's what I noticed, that you don't really do that. You don't really, I guess, just endorse many products. So just wondered, and I've seen like the studies, or at least their advertisements where they talk about the Udo's oil boosting endurance by some percent. And just wondered what it is about it that makes you use it and endorse it.
Well, the number one reason is to get my essential fatty acids. And again, this is an area that is hotly debated. There's always new research coming out. And the whole basis around the product is that it's not a supplement per se. It is a whole food product. It's pressed flaxseed oil as a base, but then it has the sesame oil, the sunflower oil, the omega-6s blended in, and even a little bit of omega-9, so that you're getting a whole range of the sixes and the threes, and
right.
it's a product that you use in your diet. It's not, say, a supplement, whereas a lot of people might have used fish oil or fish capsules, and the amount that you can actually get of your, as far as your recommended essential fatty acid intake is quite minimal, whereas in this case, I use it like I do where I used to probably use, like, olive oil. Again, I wouldn't cook with the Udo's oil, but
yeah, right.
I'm using it in a fashion that, replaces a percentage of my oil. So the way to think of it is I'm getting, a high percentage of my fat intake in this very low temperature pressed, cold pressed oil. Mm-hmm. And I'm also getting all my essential fatty acids that I need, which for me, what does that mean as an athlete? It means quicker recovery, the whole inflammatory response. Now, a lot of people will argue, without getting too much detail, that the sixes create, more inflammation, but you need a balance, and the quality of the sixes is so critical. So that's the beauty of it. I just used to, I still do hemp seeds, and I still, grind some flax seeds once in a while, but now it takes the guesswork out of it. It makes it easier for me, and as an athlete, it's a good source of fat, and it's a well-balanced source of fat, so I know I'm getting high-quality fat into my when you're trying to eat 5,000 to 8,000 calories a day. Fat is very important. It's really hard to do that many calories without adding a good percentage of fat, which for me is anywhere from 20-25%, which a lot of people would say is on the high end. But again, it's pretty hard to get that calorie intake without doing a percentage of fat like that, which is still healthy.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of people go into a higher fat diet just because, you know, fat isn't really demonized the way that it used to be, and now a lot of people are recognizing the benefits of it, and you see people eating 20-25% of their diet as fat.
Definitely. That's where the endurance comes through, because a lot of people say, well, how can you gain endurance with fat? And the real reason is that the body, you know, is able to recover and perform better, probably because people are getting a higher quality caloric intake and thus fat intake when they do that, and improving endurance and, you know, recovery from an inflammatory position. It's key.
Okay, so let's say someone is currently a runner, maybe a marathoner or ultra runner, and they do kind of recognize some of these benefits of a vegan diet or a vegetarian diet, but they're just kind of not ready to really do it, or they're scared to do it. I've just encountered a lot of people that are kind of intrigued, but not really, just aren't doing it for some reason. So are there any kind of a few just essential tips, like one or two or three things that you'd say if you're going to make the switch? And you kind of mentioned this before with saying you don't have to eat all these real strange foods. You can eat pretty normal foods. But is there anything else that you think would really help someone who's looking to make that change and make it last?
Well, I think the number one thing is making sure, first off, I mean, again, people have a lot of aspirations when they go plant-based, that all of a sudden they're going to switch everything. And I think number one, transition slowly. Give yourself some time. You know, some people are, you know, work well with going cold turkey or just changing things right around the next day. And I think it's always good to allow a gradual transition, have a plan. You can always incorporate. PCRM does a great 21-day vegan kickstart kind of program and giving support along the way. So it's key to kind of have that support network. And if you don't have that, give yourself that allowance to transition slowly. Number two, the biggest, I think, mistake a lot of plant-based eaters make initially is that they eliminate versus integrate new foods into their diet. So they just kind of look at, okay, I can't eat this, I can't eat this, I can't eat that. And then they're like, oh, what do I eat now? And they end up under-eating, which some people say, well, that might be a good thing if one wants to lose weight, but it's not the healthiest. And to do that type of approach is a big mistake. And a lot of, especially active individuals, they're probably not looking to lose a lot of weight, and it's hard to perform workouts and stay healthy and perform everyday life tasks such as work and family stuff if you're running low on calories constantly. So I definitely emphasize quantity of calories first over quality. So make sure that you have foods that replace the foods that you used to eat. And ideally, number three, you will boost your quality of foods that you're eating. So if you have to eat some processed food and maybe some foods that are maybe a bit more processed and are products and foods that somebody is used to eating, that's totally fine as far as transitioning, but ideally you work on the quality of the ingredients and the foods that you're incorporating into the diet.
Okay, great. So I guess shifting gears a little bit from diet to more towards running, when you do something like the 24-hour race or even a 50 or 100 miler, what's going through your mind as far as focus? Like that, the 24-hour race is around a track, right?
It was actually around a road loop through a park, but okay. For all intents and purposes, I mean, it was less than a mile. It was less than a mile loop, so
okay.
It very well felt like a 400-meter track at times.
Yeah, so how are you not going crazy during that? I mean, I think people have trouble not going crazy even in a 50- or 100-mile trail race, but when you're in going around one loop, what are you doing? Do you have some sort of any kind of mental tricks that you're doing, or is it just zoning out or focusing on something in particular?
I used a number of different methods. I mean, it took me to another level as far as mental focus. And I've had to do this when I've, say, run the Spartathlon, which is 153 miles of pavement through Greece, or the Badwater Ultramarathon, which is 135 miles. So for me, I did learn some of those, tricks. And for me, it's like focusing on the task at hand was really key, and not thinking about, okay, I'm at mile 50. I have 100 miles to go. If I were to think about that too much, it really messes with the mind and can really be devastating. So for me, it was all about little goals. And with the 24-hour, I integrated music. I'd focus on my breath. I'd focus on technique. I'd focus on anything that could, you know, benefit me performance-wise that kept me focused for a while and kind of just took my mind off of A, the monotony of the type of event, and then B, the discomfort, because that's an issue I deal with whether I'm running in the mountains or running around a loop course such as that. So it's all about not necessarily playing tricks on the mind, but I guess filtering out the noise. And again, you know, thoughts enter my head like, okay, I've got 12 more hours to go. I've got, you know, 8 more hours to go. I mean, those things do happen, but not dwelling on them. And it's a meditative type of, I mean, running for a 24-hour period around a loop is, it's much like any intense meditation practice. It truly is in itself a way to kind of learn the mind control and like overcoming that. And that's the beauty of something like this, because it focuses so heavily on that. You don't have a lot of distractions, except for the usual the usual ones.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It just seems like an entirely different test from running a 50 or 100 or even longer, but just where you're in varying scenery. It seems like such a more of a mental test to just not go crazy during that loop.
That's probably why it took me towards the latter part of my career here to venture off into that realm.
Right.
But
right.
It was definitely fascinating and definitely one of the hardest mental challenges I've ever come upon.
And I read that you wore the Brooks Green Silence when you set that record. Is that true?
That is true. So for a lot of people ask, well, did you switch out shoes? And I wore the same pair for the whole entire time. And,
oh, really?
You know, 165.7 miles, and felt great. You know, it just had the right mix of cushioning and support. And when running a race like that, you make so many, you know, steps and strides that every little, I guess, weight counts. And to give my body just kind of that feeling of, okay, I've got one of the lightest weight shoes that I would be comfortable wearing for this distance, and gave it a shot.
Yeah, that's what I noticed about it, was just that it was extremely lightweight for the fact that it still had a kind of a cushioned sole on it, compared to, like, the 5x5 fingers or something like that.
Exactly.
And I mean, there's obviously all the environmental aspects of it, and I wrote a post about that, and people were really interested in it, in the environmental thing. So was that part of it for you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's been one of my favorite shoes from that standpoint as well. I mean, anytime a shoe company like Brooks, where they've been focusing on sustainability, and that was unheard of 10 years ago and 15 years ago in the footwear industry. So it is important to me, and I've been really focused on supporting that and encouraging Brooks to do more and more. We're definitely trying to do more with the design of the Cascadia as well, in mm-hmm. keeping, you know, as many pieces of that shoe and the components involved in that shoe as sustainable as possible. And again, you know, it's not 100% there, but we're making steps each reiteration and each model into making it more sustainable. You know, again, like the Green Silence, the heel counter is made of recycled CDs. And again, a lot of these things would just be dumped into landfills. And shoes, unfortunately, are a very, high landfill volume type product and very throwaway in some ways. But if we can make it last better and hold up with using recycled components, we're definitely making strides in the right direction. We've got a ways to go. Keep working on it.
Uh-huh. And do you wear that kind of the minimalist style shoe? I mean, do you wear that a lot for even like a trail race? Or do you ever run in 5x5 fingers for races? Or is that kind of something you just work into your training every once in a while?
I think barefoot running and training is a great adjunct. And you know, for some people, it's the best thing that's happened to their running. And I say great. Or if it inspires people to get back into running because now they pay more attention to their technique. I mean, there's a lot of benefits, and I do incorporate some barefoot running into my training. But as far as every day or, you know, the use of running in that extreme minimalism or shoe of something like the Vibram 5 Finger or using just, you know, my bare feet, I'm not going to be able to perform as well because I'm not getting enough protection. And there's a fine line between getting enough protection. I definitely use a lighter weight shoe when I'm out on the trails and roads and have experimented with a number of things and prototypes with Brooks. But the key is having some form of cushioning and, you know, protecting the foot. I went down to the Copper Canyon with, of course, the Tarmar, and the whole Born to Run book speaks of this. The Tarmar and used pyre tread, and that's in some cases up to half inch thick, 3/8 uh-huh. inch thick. I mean, it's thick rubber. It's tire tread. You know, it's
right. Like right. They're not really running barefoot.
No, they're not. And you can't run fast on technical terrain. And again, for some people, running fast isn't their main objective. Their goal is to get to the finish line, and I think everybody wants to get to the finish line. But if you do want to have a mix of feeling for the ground, you know, integration and proprioception with technique, then going a more minimal shoe would be great for that. And for some people, you know, running in bare feet and running in a minimal shoe is the best way for them to enjoy the sport. And I say go for it, definitely.
All right. So now that you've done that 24-hour record and set that for the American record, you mentioned that was kind of something that you did later in your career because it required such mental focus. So what's next for you? Are you kind of satisfied with everything you've accomplished in ultra running, or are you still going to be? Do you still have certain races in mind or certain things you'd like to achieve?
Yeah, I still have a few more projects. I mean, I've been at this now, I've been going on 17 years, and there's always that question of like what more do I need to do? And I broke the American record in the 24-hour, but there's that world record kind of looming out there, and to see what I can do with that. And again, it's one of the toughest experiences I've had in a race, and there's something I want to improve upon. I feel like I can do better along those lines. So I'm going back to the World Championships this year for the 24-hour, and also on the mountain trail side of things. I have the Ultra Trail Tour de Mont Blanc, which I was training for specifically this year after the 24-hour, was canceled 30 kilometers into the race. So unfortunately, I kind of got shut down, and I haven't had my best race there. And I'm definitely going to go back there in August, so those are kind of my two focus points for next season. And we'll see. I usually fill in some 50Ks and 50 milers in between.
Right, okay. So for the world record, what do you need, like another 13 miles or something? Was it 178? Is that the world record?
Yeah, it's right around for most people. I mean, it's 180 miles, which I've got, you know, some work to do on that. So we'll see. The world record for the track, there's a different record for road and track. The world record for the track is just over 300 kilometers, and that's 188 miles. So there's some distance to be covered, and I feel like I can definitely improve a lot on
And what specifically would you do to try to improve? I mean, just running a better race, or is it really the conditioning thing?
I think, you know, the training, I trained hard for it. It was a fairly early season race in May, and last year I took my normal 4 to 6 weeks off, and it was probably a little late in the 2009 season to do that, and I kind of tried to tack on a 24 race at the end of a very long season, and so I was needing to take this break, and I just didn't have the buildup, and so that would be different. Plus, I just recently moved to Boulder, Colorado, and I'm training at altitude now, and I'm switching some things up with training and still keeping with the strengthening and the kind of well-rounded balanced training that I like to incorporate. But I'm training with a bunch of young guys here, and you know, it's just been fun to link up with other runners and get inspired by those, along with the other folks and other athletes in this area of the country. It's good for me at this point in the career.
Yeah,
definitely.
It's a big trail running place there, right?
It is, and the access to the trails and, you know, incorporating that with the road training for the 24-hour, I feel like I'd have a perfect mix.
Uh-huh. And what kind of, you mentioned, I think, strength. Do you do strength training exercises besides running?
Yeah, actually get in the gym. I know a lot of runners are adverse to picking up any weights or being in the gym, but I'm a firm advocate of blending in strength training, not only with, you know, whether it's free weights or whatever resistance that one wants to use, body weight. I also do a core routine that incorporates core conditioning, and all of that, again, along with things like yoga, blends, I think, the best of, you know, brings together a whole picture of training, not just putting in more miles. And obviously you have to run more if you want to, you know, take things up a notch, but I feel like for the time some people have, and for some people they can't run 6 days a week, so it's important to incorporate some other cross training or focus on strength or focus on another area of balanced fitness.
All right, so the last thing, I think it was Runner's World, and I read that you are working on a book. Is that true, and can you tell us about that if it is?
It is true. Yeah, I am finally, after years of people telling me that, you know, when are you coming out with your own book or do you have a book? And it's been on the back burner a lot just due to time constraints, and I finally decided to do that. And it'll be out hopefully by the end of 2011 or early 2012.
Okay.
And it's going to have a good mix of everything from, you know, obviously my career and what I've learned throughout my years of competing in ultramarathons, but along with that will be the training advice, and incorporating nutrition will be a big part of it. And without letting out too much, some interesting, there'll even be a few recipes, because people know I love to cook, and so many people have been want me to put out a cookbook, especially anybody who's had my food. So it's a real passion of mine. Definitely interested in preparing food. So yeah, it's still morphing right now, and going to take on probably a new shape over the next 6 months, but it will be out.
I think I was really excited to see that you were working on. I'm sure tons of other people are too, especially vegans and vegetarians. So I'm sure, you know, it's not going to be a problem selling many copies of that. all right, so I guess that's it. Thanks a lot for being here. Like I said before, you're an incredible inspiration for vegetarians and vegans, as with everything you're doing as an ultra runner and just getting out there and proving that you really can do amazing things with this kind of diet. So it's been great to talk to you, and thanks a lot.
Well, thanks for having me, and to all your readers and followers, you don't have to go full plant-based to feel the effects. I think for so many people, it's, you know, take it slowly and just try to keep learning. That's the biggest thing for me. Again, if you had asked me 20 years ago, I would have thought I'd be in, you know, the shoes that I am right now. Would never have guessed it. So just all about a life process.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Scott.
Thanks for having me.
Okay.